Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Joining us now is Rob Staton, author of the Seahawks Draft blog. You can also hear him on BBC Radio Sheffield. Hey, Rob, how's it going?
I'm great, Stacey. You know, I wish the Seahawks were a little bit better, but, you know, never mind. You know, we've got to move on. We've got to talk about it and set for an interesting few months, I think.
You know what? Let's start here. It's maybe the hardest question, but curious as to what the first thing is that pops to your mind. What's the biggest reason right now the Seahawks are 3-7?
I think that the way that the team has been built has been a bit of a car crash over the last few years. I don't think that they've used their resources properly. I think that the resources that they have used has been a contradiction to what Pete Carroll wants. You know, he says that he wants to run the ball. He wants to shorten the game. He wants explosive plays. Well, I would have thought the way to do that would be to focus on the trenches, make sure that you have a fantastic offensive line, make sure that you have a superb pass rush and a running game and some running backs that can stay on the field who are prolific and are among the best in the league. And they don't have any of those things. And that is not conducive with this style of play. It seems to me a little bit like they've built the team poorly and now they just hope that Russell Wilson is going to produce the magic. And I know a lot of people are very critical of Russell at the moment. Let's not forget that he's coming back from a very serious injury here and that this is the first really challenging spell in his entire football career, and include Wisconsin and NC State in that as well. So I think the way that the team has been built has been poor, poor use of resources. That is what I put it down to.
Now, Rob, the other aspect of this is, you know, Stacey asked you what's your reasoning for why they're here. Now, the question is, what do they do with it? What do they go from here, knowing that they've got seven games? What are you evaluating over these seven games to determine what the best move is forward?
I don't think there's a lot that can happen in these remaining games, Jake, that is going to change anything at this point. I suspect that Russell Wilson hasn't got any great desire to leave Seattle or the Seahawks, but it's hard to look at the team as it's formed now and to think that anything's going to change between now and the end of the season that is going to make him believe that this is the place to be, you know, that this isn't a franchise that has lost its way, that isn't on the right track to compete deep into the playoffs for the next few years. So I think without major change at the very top, I think that's what's needed essentially, and that's not going to come until the very end of the season, if at all. He's probably going to go to the team in the offseason. He's going to try and work out a way to part ways in the right way, in a reasonable way. And then I think the obvious ideal destination will be to go and play for the New Orleans Saints, to go and play for Sean Payton. The other team that maybe is worth keeping an eye on here is Denver, because I think it's pretty clear that Vic Fangio will go at the end of the season. They're probably going to go and appoint an offensive coach. And the noises from the Broncos seem to indicate that they're going to target a veteran starter via trade. So whether that is Russell Wilson or an Aaron Rodgers type. And I don't want this to happen, Jake, because I think it puts the Seahawks on a pathway to potential oblivion. But they've gone down a road where this feels inevitable now. And I'm not sure that anything that happens between now and then, because the Seahawks are not going to make the playoffs, is going to change that.
I just want to tap back into, I can guess what the answer is, but you talk about going into potential oblivion. I think someone who disagreed with you would hear that and say, well, if you're getting a couple first round picks for Wilson, you have a chance to rebuild your team. Why do you say potential oblivion?
You know, those fans exist, Stacey, and you know they're well within their rights to have that opinion, but I think they're being very blasé about what life without Wilson will mean. You know, it means you join that long list of teams, and you know who they are, who spend year after year looking for a quarterback of Wilson's quality. And any picks that you receive in a trade, they actually have to become good, productive players. You know, they can't be Rashad Penny and LJ Collier, but they easily could be. And there are teams out there who've spent decades, not just a few years, we're talking decades here, looking for a franchise quarterback. You do not want to be one of those. And everybody loves to point to things like Ryan Tannehill and the Titans and say, look, that worked very well. Well, guess what? You know, there are thousands of examples where a good or a decent roster is let down by average quarterback play. And people forget that Wilson is basically having the first reasonably challenging period in his entire career. It's half a season at the end of 2020, and now an inconsistent season, which has included a very serious finger injury this year. Before that, he's setting records. He's winning Super Bowls, records galore. He's carrying the team. And I think that the phrase to remember here is form is temporary, class is permanent. Let's not forget that.
Now, Rob, one of the other things, too, is that, okay, so if you go down that road, if Russell Wilson did leave, and I know people are listening to this going like, I don't want to hear this conversation. I'm going to put my earmuffs on, but just hear this out, because I think Rob has unique perspective on this is, okay, so now you get down to the situation where it becomes, okay, Russell, is he gone? Now Pete Carroll, he's leading this team. Do you see a situation or foresee a possibility where Pete Carroll is maybe not the head coach at the end of this season?
Yes, absolutely. And you know what? 4 years ago, Jake, the Seahawks were facing a big reset, weren't they, in 2017? And Jay Glazer, who is a reliable reporter, came out before one of the games right at the end of the year. I think it was against Arizona, and said that Pete Carroll was considering retirement. And he didn't retire. You know, he led the rebuild, and it just hasn't worked. But if he was thinking of retiring at the end of the 2017 season, well, there's an even bigger rebuild on the cards now. And I can't see him taking that on. Let's remember this. When he signed his new five-year contract a year ago, the Seahawks were 6-1. So he will have signed that contract thinking he's signing a deal to lead a major contender for a few more years at the top of the NFC. And so much has changed since that contract was signed. There is a big difference between leading a challenger and just keeping things ticking along for a few years and either overseeing a major reset or having the quarterback potentially leaving and then having to rebuild with a new QB. And I don't think any of us truly think Wilson will be here if Carroll is. So what then? It took the Seahawks 3 years to land on Russell Wilson. When Carroll first came in, they had to go through the final days of Matt Hasselbeck, then Tavares Jackson, then Charlie Whitehurst and Matt Flynn. Is Carroll going to spend the next 3 years looking for a quarterback? And then when he's in his mid-70s, potentially, only potentially having a team ready to compete, that just doesn't seem like a viable plan to me. I also think the impromptu USC article in the LA Times a few weeks ago, when that job came up, wasn't a coincidence. It might have been a little nudge and a glance in USC's direction. So I think there is a possibility that Carroll will look at the landscape at the end of this season and decide it's time to move on, best go and be remembered as a legend rather than stay, launch a major rebuild and potentially be remembered as the coach who ran Russell Wilson out of town.
Yeah, I want to get back to maybe the larger point about team building, particularly that search for a quarterback. And we've seen the Jets do that for however many, I mean, years and years and years at this point. You've seen the Bears go through the same struggle. And I agree with you that it is one of the hardest things to find in football. I find myself going back and forth with friends, with some fans about the most, I would say, Rob, common thing I hear is, you know, Russell Wilson's bloated salary is holding this team back. And if you had more money, I'm sure you've heard this, if you had more money to spend or more draft picks to spend on good talent around him, you wouldn't need a quarterback as good. What's your response to that?
Yeah, I always find this very interesting. So let's just say, okay, let's take $10 million off Russell Wilson's salary. Russell Wilson's going to give the Seahawks an early Christmas present. They're going to take $10 million off his salary for the next 5 years. So you've got an extra $10 million to spend. The people realize that that is basically the price of Brandon Schell and Benson Mayowa. So what is $10 million actually going to get you? This is one of the more tiresome arguments that Russell Wilson's salary is holding the Seahawks back. You know, there are plenty of teams out there that are paying big money for a quarterback who simply have drafted better and have signed players better. Let's just take the Dallas Cowboys as an example. They're paying Dak Prescott an absolute fortune. They're paying Zeke Elliott a fortune. They're paying Amari Cooper an absolute fortune. They've got an expensive veteran offensive line who they're all paying. The reason that the Cowboys are in a position to have a deep run in the playoffs is because they draft very well. They'll go and get a CD Lamb. They hit on their first round picks, Micah Parsons. They get Trevon Diggs in the second round. Hey, the Seahawks need a corner. They've needed a cornerback for years. The Dallas Cowboys take Trevon Diggs. The Seahawks don't. You know, these are the kind of things that put you in contention. And then they go and fill out their roster with very clever free agent signings. They'll go and get a Keanu Neal for, you know, a cup of coffee. When the Seahawks are playing a player at a very similar position, $17.5 million, and have paid two first round picks to have him. So it's that roster construction. It's drafting well. It's bringing veterans in. You can have an expensive quarterback, because at the end of the day, you need a good quarterback to get to the playoffs. I know people constantly say, oh, you just need any old rookie in there and then a world-class team everywhere else. And no. You need a good quarterback. The quarterbacks that get to the Final Four are your Patrick Mahomes, your Tom Brady's, your Josh Allen's, you know, your Russell Wilson's, your Aaron Rodgers. It's people like this who will ultimately get you to the dance. The key is to build your team properly around them. And the Seahawks simply have not done that since the reset in 2018.
It's such a great point. You know what I think that happens most especially, maybe some Seahawks fans see it, is the perception that was the case with Russell Wilson's first year. And even though Russell Wilson is better now and the Seahawks had a historically great defense, Rob, I think it's a little bit of revisionist history to kind of look at that team and say, you had everything else great and just an okay quarterback. Like, Wilson was still talented. He was still a guy that was catching eyes around the league with people saying this guy could be something.
Yeah, well, you know, he was in an Eminem song in 2013.
That's an important note.
let's not forget, you know, he was the star attraction, you know, in a draft class that had so much talent and people were very excited about Andrew Luck and Robert Griffin III and a lot of other players. It was Russell Wilson who was the star. He was the exciting new thing. He was the person who has launched this new era of NFL football where teams look for these creative, improvising quarterbacks who are mobile, who can throw the ball downfield. You know, he was a trailblazer in many ways. And I just think that, like I said, I think people have become a little complacent. They've just got used to seeing Russell Wilson be so good for a long time. And now that he's had the first really challenging period of his career, people are willing to go, oh, do you know what? You know, we don't want to go down that road. But there is something to remember with this. So in 2018, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers won six games and he threw 25 touchdowns. And people were going, Aaron Rodgers looks like he's done. They've had back-to-back years of six-win seasons. And maybe they need to move on. The Packers certainly thought they might need to because they drafted a quarterback in the first round in 2020. But guess what? 2 years after that, after those difficult six-win seasons, Rodgers winning the NFL MVP. The Packers have won 13 games in back-to-back years. They went to the NFC Championship game 2 years in a row. The reason being, they spent money in the trenches. They massively improved their pass rush. They produced a proper running game behind a good offensive line. And they brought in a progressive, offensive-minded head coach who could open up the passing game, open up the offense, and create an environment from which Aaron Rodgers could thrive. And that is the blueprint. The Seahawks should look at what the Packers did when they moved on from Mike McCarthy and say, let's do that.
You know, Rob, listening to you talk about this, it's been one of my greatest frustrations in 4 years. 4 years since they turned this thing over and they really made Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner the keystones, right? Keystone of the offense, keystone of the defense. We're going to build around these two guys. And I really don't see the roster construction reflecting that over the last 4 years. And Rob, this is something that I call you an expert on. You are somebody that dives into this heavily with the draft, with roster construction. I really, really value your opinion here. But are you just scratching your head like I am in that situation? Because it just doesn't make sense why they haven't in the 4 years really invested, you know, in those areas, in the trenches, in front of these two players, which ultimately make a linebacker better and obviously make a quarterback better.
Jake, at best it's been muddled. At worst, it's been desperate. So you start a 2019 offseason and you talk about the priority is to fix the pass rush. And that amounts to essentially subtracting Jadeveon Clowney and bringing in Benson Mayowa and Bruce Irvin as almost a job done. That's not a pathway forward. You talk about the style that you want to play and you want to be a running team and you don't go and take a Jack Conklin, who's been an all-pro for the Cleveland Browns. You'll spread the money out and go and get Shell and BJ Finney and Cedric Ebuie and talk about those three players as being like your key three players that when you started the offseason, you were going after those three guys rather than just going and getting a fantastic right tackle and then drafting depth behind them in the way that they did last year by taking a pretty talented-looking late-round left tackle. You can go and fill in behind a Jack Conklin with a cheap rookie, but go and get the Conklin. You know, load up that offensive line. Make that a major plus for your team so that you can go and run the ball. And then, do you know what? Go and get a really good running back. I know that you spent a first-round pick on Rashad Penny in 2018, and my word, they are giving him every opportunity to come back. It's like he's on his like his sixth chance now to come back and make this work, and it never works. And then you have a guy going into the 2020 draft who all he has done at Wisconsin is run over people and run away from people. He's just had 3 years of massive, major production, and he's going on NBC and pleading with the Seahawks to take him. He is talking up Pete Carroll. He is saying how proud he would be to play with Russell Wilson. He's going on with Colin Cowherd, and he's saying, I would love to play for the Seahawks. And you don't take him. You take a linebacker instead to replace KJ Wright. You know, that's just bizarre thinking. And by the way, I think I heard that Jonathan Taylor is doing quite well right now. Perhaps they could do with a player like Jonathan Taylor to help support this offense and this running game and this quarterback. So, yes, Jake, I don't understand it. Bobby Wagner's best year in Seattle was when they had the likes of Sheldon Richardson and Frank Clark and Jaron Reed up from paving the way for him to just roam around and make huge plays. They haven't done a good enough job on the defensive line. They've not done a good enough job on the offensive line. The running game has been erratic some of the time and a shambles the rest. It's not conducive with success. People can blame Russell Wilson if they want, but they're barking up the wrong tree.
All right, he is Rob Staton. You can read his work at SeahawksDraftBlog.com. Awesome stuff as always. Rob, we kept you late, but it was so wonderful talking to you, and we really appreciate the time.
Anytime, guys. My pleasure.
Again, that was Rob Staton on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru, Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
Time for some questions for you, Jake. We'll start here. First down, what challenge does the Washington football team present to the Seahawks?
Well, I'm going to give it to you on both sides of the ball. Number one, the Washington football team offensively, led by quarterback Taylor Heinicke, has been playing really good football over the last 2 weeks specifically, And this is a guy that he reminds me of a younger, more mobile Ryan Fitzpatrick. This guy could pop off and can have an amazing game. He could also look like a backup quarterback in this league and throw interceptions, make really bad mistakes. And so you're getting Taylor Heinicke at a point where he's feeling it, though. And he's feeling really good. They have a very good offense. In terms of playmakers, they've got a good offensive line. Antonio Gibson. And then Terry McLaurin at the receiver position. So overall, I think they present enough of a problem stylistically. They present a problem in terms of their skill position players that the Seattle Seahawks are going to have to really be on it in terms of their defensive play. And then you look at it on the offensive side of the ball. Look, running the football is a big priority to you. The Washington football team, they are one of the best teams in the league in terms of their rush defense. And the reason why, up the middle. Their two defensive tackles are stellar. They've got great linebacker play. They are very disciplined in the run game. And even though they are out Montez Sweat and Chase Young, they are still very, very good in the running game. So that is going to be a unique challenge for the Seahawks offense. And so those are two challenges that are presented to the Seahawks come Monday night that the Seahawks are going to have to find a way to maximize their ability to win and to neutralize that Washington offense and to be able to run the football despite a Washington team that has been very good in that area.
Second down. Chris Sims says Russell Wilson's eyes would be opened if he went to a different organization. What's that mean, and do you think they would?
Let's listen to what Chris Sims says here in cut number one.
He doesn't even know what he doesn't know. Right. Yeah. He doesn't even know what he doesn't know. He doesn't. Like, if he went to New England with Brady and company, he'd be like, what? Wait, that's what you guys are doing here? That's what you've reading? That's what it is? Like, oh, wait, so you're playing this play? Oh, like, there's yes. It's been beginner-level offense since he's been there. 100%.
No, I disagree with Chris Sims on that. I think it's ridiculous to act like that in terms of Russell Wilson not knowing how to read plays or being coached well enough to read plays, things of that nature. What I do think, though, is when it comes to being around a group that really, truly values and puts offensive offensive systems first and put a priority on that, and having something that is conducive to building an offensive system the right way. I do think that that is something that when you talk about this organization and the lack of investments on the offensive line or continuing to miss in that area, and now being through their third offensive coordinator, they have not found a system that has continued to grow, evolve, and develop along with the quarterback of Russell Wilson. And that, to me, has been a big problem as to why you're here in this circumstance, getting the most out of your best player. That's a big problem.
Third down. We talked around it a bit, but I'll throw you the question. Should Wazoo interim head coach Jake Dicker be a legitimate candidate to make his interim role full-time?
I love the job that Jake Dickert has done. I think that he has really put himself on the map, but I don't believe he is a legitimate candidate.
Why?
No. I think it's a feel-good story. I like him. He's done a great job. But in terms of WSU, what they need to do moving forward is they've got to find legit stability. They've got to find somebody that can really spark the program. And so that, to me, is what WSU needs. And I don't think Dickert provides that. I think he's a good, solid coach. What he's done in the interim has been absolutely commendable. But I don't think that he is the guy that's going to lead WSU to shake things up in the Pac-12 and give them the best opportunity in a down Pac-12 to potentially be a consistent winner in the North and in the Pac-12. So although I love the job that Jake Dickert has done, I don't think that he is a legitimate candidate to assume the head coaching roles full-time.
Fourth down. All right, one of our hype trains today was that Sam Heward would make his first start, this one being in the Apple Cup this Friday. All three of us guessed that that would happen. What would be your advice if it were to happen?
Well, it would be a lot of fun to see Sam Heward out there. My biggest advice is just go enjoy the moment. Go enjoy the moment and cut it loose. Don't overthink. Don't worry about what everybody else is thinking. Don't worry about the fact that your family and friends and everybody's watching you on TV. Just go out there and own the moment. And whatever happens, happens. I mean, literally, there is nothing that Sam Heward can lose if he goes out there and plays. Even if he throws multiple interceptions, it doesn't matter. There's not the expectation for him to go off and that he's going to win the game for them. You are playing with house money. And play like it. You know, that would be my advice to him, is to go out and cut it loose, have fun, and, you know, bring it back to those Kennedy Catholic days with, you know, Sheldon Cross dialing up those air raid touchdowns for you. I would really be in that mindset as you go into this Apple Cup game. Don't make it bigger than it is.
Waiting for the Tyee High School football star to finally make it big.
Yeah, me too. I'm sure they are on the cusp of making that happen.
Thank you very much. Don't forget, you can watch the show live on 710sports.com/video. Coming up in the timeline, the Rams haven't played yet, but they already took a big L. And you know what? I think it's much deserved. That's next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Jake and Stacey, telling you the top stories you're going to see on your own timeline. Do we have one, Jake?
No, but we have a comment on the text line that I want to address.
Yeah, go for it, man.
The 253 on here, amongst many other things, says, look, in a decade, and really it sparked, I mean, our interview with Rob Staden sparked a lot of texts here from the text line, which, you know, just means that there's really good discourse here. And I think what Rob had to say struck a chord with a lot of people, you know, positively or negatively. But, you know, someone talking about how, you know, being a Hawks fan for 20 years and understanding that this is as good as it gets under Pete Carroll, John Schneider, and that it sounds like we're turning on his Hawks. I'm sorry, but the conversation about the Hawks and the Seahawks and what is best for the organization, there is not one individual that makes up the Seahawks. It's not Pete Carroll. It's not John Schneider. It's not Russell Wilson. It's not Bobby Wagner. It's not one individual that you remain loyal to when it comes to the betterment of the Seahawks franchise. Mike Holmgren was a very successful head coach here. He is no longer the head coach. Got you to a Super Bowl. Eventually, they had to move on from him. It happens. And no one wants to see this happen. No one wants to have these conversations. But the idea that talking about one individual and talking about certain aspects of the team is turning on the Seahawks. No, it's actually evaluating what is best for the organization and how they move forward. And sometimes that means having to move on from certain individuals that have been mainstays. It's hard. It's not easy conversations. But that is where people have to think about the organization, the Seattle Seahawks, the team that you really love. It's not the individuals. You love the individuals and the success that they've brought to your organization and the success that they've done. That doesn't mean you're supposed to just hold on to them because of past success, right? And again, I'm saying anybody, right? And so that to me is when you get into these conversations, Stacey. I'm sorry. I know I got us off schedule here from the timeline, but it just drives me crazy when we have these discussions and it's like there's this loyalty factor, like they are the organization. No, they're not. No player, no head coach, no GM is the team. And so when you have these evaluations year in and year out, it's about the team. What is best for the Seattle Seahawks? And right now at 3-7, yeah, you're going to have conversations about evaluating what is best for the future of the Seattle Seahawks organization moving forward.
Well said, Jake. I'll only tack on that it is. I go in between agreeing with this and it being my biggest pet peeve. I really can't tell which side I fall on, which is the idea that people should be more thankful or grateful for the success the Seahawks have had. And part of me looks to it and says, absolutely, this is a team, no other team except for New England, no other team except for the Patriots has won as many games as the Seahawks have over the last decade. But also being critical of a team and saying, well, what needs to change? To me, to Jake, I'm sure, those are fascinating conversations. They're interesting conversations. They're conversations that get you fired up because either you care about the team or, in my case, you've been covering the team. And it's certainly one of the most difficult stories I've covered because it makes me worried about how fans will respond. I'm being genuinely, like, vulnerable, serious with you right now. I am genuinely worried. Will fans still be excited? And I know that sounds so silly, but G and I do the end zone. We get so excited. And I was thinking, like, man, I hope people are still fired up about it and still ready to get rolling. And it challenges you, just like it's challenging Pete Carroll in a way to figure out, like, what's going to keep me going in this season? And really, you know, there's a lot there. There's a lot of meat on the bone and a lot of really fascinating conversations to have. And I think that just as there should be space for people to be like, I don't know, I'm cool with where this team's at right now, there should be space for people to say, well, I want this.
Right. But when you have those discussions, it doesn't mean that you're not grateful or thankful for the time that has happened or the great success that has been there. I don't think you need to say that they're untouchable at this point because of the run of success that they've had. At some point, that comes to an end. And are you holding yourself hostage to the past, or is it the right thing for the organization moving forward? And you know what you brought up, 100% true. But that to me is, in this conversation as we move forward, you have to think in those terms. What is best for the organization, not the individuals? And do the individuals help the organization? That's what head coaches, that's what GMs do every single day with roster construction. You're either on the team or you're not. You're either helping the team or you're not, or you're not here anymore. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your time, Richard Sherman, but it was time to move on. Thank you for your time, Earl Thomas, but it's time to move on. Head coaches, GMs make those decisions all the time. So when it comes to any individual, when I see texts like that, it drives me crazy because are you willing then to suffer through more bad years? What is it going to take for you to eventually realize that eventually you got to move on and move forward? And I'm not saying that that is the case with any particular individual, Pete Carroll, John Schneider, Russell Wilson. Don't misconstrue what I'm saying. But when we have these conversations and we're looking at every single aspect to it, I mean, that's what you're doing. You're not turning on the Seahawks. You're actually trying to evaluate what's better for the Seahawks moving forward.
I'm actually, speaking of Thanksgiving, thankful for texts like that because I love a good rant. DJ, I love a good rant. Man, it's my favorite thing in the world when anyone just like, you know what? Actually, I'm going to interrupt this. I'm going to sound off about this. That's when you know it's about to get good. Just, yes, let's go. Well said, Jake. Well said. I am going to switch here. Speaking of the timeline, there was a video going around. So, you know, if we do want to talk about a moment of kind of being grateful, being thankful, how about one of the most important voices in college hoops, Dick Vitale? He returned to the announcing booth. So earlier he was diagnosed with melanoma. Then I think I want to say October, he was diagnosed with lymphoma. It was relatively recent that he received his second diagnosis. It was unrelated to the first diagnosis. So now he's 82 years old. he is entering into chemotherapy. Obviously, it's a very emotional time. I can't imagine. And he is able to return to the announcing booth for the first time in this past game, this game that just happened between number one Gonzaga and number two UCLA, a fantastic game. But before the game even started, before tip-off, this was Vital returning to the announcing booth, just the message that he had when asked in the open, you know, kind of like, hey, welcome back, how are you feeling? A very emotional moment.
Made it out to Las Vegas for a game that I know you had circled for a long, long time. It was just awesome. Great to see you.
Great being here, Dave. I didn't want to cry. I can't believe I'm sitting here. This is really a big thrill for me. I want to thank all you people. Sent me so many great messages. ESPN, Jimmy Pataro, all my buddies at ESPN. I want to thank certainly my family and all the fans. My, you've been unbelievable.
Man.
Get your tissues out. You should have prefaced that,
I know,
Stacey, getting everybody emotional.
I mean,
come on.
I know.
You got to give us more heads up on that. Dick Vitale, you know, there are certain individuals who become larger than life, right, in certain aspects. And Dick Vitale, you know, is college basketball and all the good that comes with it, right? The excitement, the catchphrases, the energy for the biggest game of the week, the biggest game of the year. You think of Dick Vitale, and any player that any player that ever dreams of becoming a big time basketball player someday, college basketball. You impersonate Dick Vitale's voice, and you know, I just to see him going through and literally battling for his life, and to have this opportunity at 82 years old amidst all this adversity to be able to get the chance to do what he loves, what he's most passionate about in anything on this earth, is incredibly emotional for not just him, but for so many who appreciate what he has done for the sporting community and obviously college basketball.
I think, too, like I can't imagine putting myself in that headspace, but I would imagine if you – when you love doing something, even if you love it with everything that you are, sometimes even that can be greater when you think that you've lost it. So I'm thinking of, like, if you think of, like, the thing that you love most doing, and it doesn't have to be for Dick Vitale, it's probably calling games. It's being around college basketball. It's being in this arena, literally and figuratively, that he loves to be in, that gives him life and excitement and energy and purpose. But it could be as simple as, like, I absolutely love like watching movies with my two best friends. Like anytime I hang out with them, it's a blast. Or it could be you love having dinner with your family. Even if you think you love it, I think that facing the possibility of that being taken away from you, the next time you do that, if you thought you'd never be able to do it again, I think the next time you do that must hit you like a ton of bricks, but in a very positive emotional way, where you, it's like an out-of-body experience, I would think.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sitting here, and I'm at the dinner table, I'm with my family, but oh my God, I never thought I'd do this again, and suddenly I can't believe it. I can't believe I'm here. And that's literally what he says. He says, I can't believe I'm here.
Yeah. I'll give you a personal story here real quick. I mean, for me, in my college football career, it was up and down and a lot of downs, you know, especially towards the end of my college football career, and to the point where, you know, when I go to Miami and, hey, this is going to be my opportunity, and, you know, play with guys like Philip Dorsett and Duke Johnson and you know, a bunch of guys that ended up going to the league, and I didn't win the job. And at that point, I'm in my senior year and my last year, and I'm not even the starter. I'm not even playing. And I thought I was done. Thought it was over. Done. And everybody asked me at that point in time, what are you going to do next? And to be able to, you know, work through that to get myself in the best shape that I ever got in my life, and to, you know, just go for it and get the opportunity to walk on the field with the New York Jets and have a rookie tryout opportunity and know that it was the last time that potentially I was ever going to have to hold on to a helmet again and be able to play the game that I loved at that level. I mean, it definitely enhances everything for you, and you have greater appreciation for everything that you do. And you know, quite frankly, for me, it actually made me perform better, and I ended up, you know, getting a contract with the Jets after that weekend. But, you know, it just makes you have such a greater appreciation for everything. And Dick Vitale times that by a million with the situation that he's going through. And gosh, it just, you, you root for him and obviously want the best for him. And anybody that has a loved one that's going through this battle with cancer or anything, I mean, it just, my thoughts and prayers are out to
Man,
you.
Man, talk about being thankful, right? Like,
yes.
That's really what it is. And honestly, 100%. Like, thankful for Dickie V, like one of the great voices that's been around. It's like these people that are kind of just parts of your life over the years that you realize during this time. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. We've got one more conversation we're going to have. We're going to go full circle. We talked about what we want to see, what we're going to learn over the next 7 weeks from the Seahawks. Well, now I want to know what we're looking forward to in sports over the next 7 days. When we come back here on Monday after the Thanksgiving weekend, after a weekend full of sports, maybe some sports moves, what do we want to see? What are we hoping we see? Or what are we excited to see? So we're going from next 7 weeks to next 7 days. And then don't forget, Dave Wyman going to join us. We have your two-hour preview for this upcoming Monday Seahawks game. It's all coming your way next on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, as a reminder, we are starting a two-hour preview of the upcoming Seahawks game with The Huddle. Dave Wyman going to join us. We're going to talk to Quandre Diggs. You'll hear from Pete Carroll, all kinds of good stuff before we get to that, though. Jake, we open the show by talking about what we will learn about the Seahawks over the next 7 games. So I'm going to shorten that time frame, and instead we're going to say what we want to see from any team, just from sports, over the next 7 days. And Jake, why don't you get us started with when we are back here on Monday, stuffed from eating leftovers for like a
yes.
fourth day in a row, what are you hoping we will have seen?
What am I hoping we've seen? Okay, I'll start it off. Mariners actually make a move. That we are going to see Marcus Semien. We're going to signed maybe. We're going to see a trade of some kind. Maybe Kevin Gausman is signed. I don't know. But I want to see the Mariners make a move. We're approaching, it's 7 days away from this thing getting shut down and from free agency getting shut down until the collective bargaining agreement is agreed upon in Major League Baseball. So you've got 7 days to make something happen. I think there's going to be a big push. With some of these players and some of these key names and stars, and we'll see if the Mariners are a part of that. But I do think that over the weekend you could see some action.
Question: will any move suffice? For instance, what if they just sign Tyler Anderson back?
I'd be happy.
Okay, yeah, so you're saying, you know what? I just want to see some traction.
I want to see some movement. I want to see
something
happen. Just give us something,
right.
Please.
Just work at some of the plate. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be everything. You don't have to clear it. Just start working away at some of it. DJ, what do you want to see?
Taylor Jacobs, I want him to cover his ears. He's sitting behind me right now.
Oh, no, Tay. Tells me this is about the Apple Cup.
I want Sam Hurd to start, which we all think is going to happen. But
sure.
I want to see him start, and I want him to tear the Cougs apart through the air.
Okay.
I don't know if that'll actually happen.
Now, is that in a winning effort or just...
In a winning effort, yes.
Will you be satisfied if it's not in a winning effort, but he looks great?
Yes, I will be. So I guess I just want him to look good. I want him to look good. I don't know him personally, but we know Brock, of course. You know, that's his... that Brock is his uncle, of course. But I want Sam to start. I want him to perform well against the Cougs, whether it's a win or a loss. But preferably, it'd be a win.
Okay. Okay.
I went so basic. You guys are going to make fun of me. Big time make fun of me. I really, really, really hope that we're coming in here Monday, or even that we're all texting each other in a thread on Thursday talking about how good those Thanksgiving Day games are. Like, I really want a good... Yes.
Really?
You guys already talked about the Mariners. You already talked about Apple Cup. You already talked about all the events that are going on.
Okay.
I want to come back in and I want to say, you know what? Oh, my God. Like, I just want to be able to sit and eat for hours and hours and hours and watch really good football. Is that so much to ask?
No, it is not so much to ask. And quite frankly, obviously, great games are going to make for a great weekend.
I think it's a great slate of games.
Outside of spending time with family and having a great Thanksgiving meal and all those different things, The family time obviously being the most important, but having some good football to enjoy and to watch and to talk about. I hope we have a great Apple Cup game, right? I mean, there's a lot of things that could happen over the weekend that, that we come back to on Monday as we're preparing for a Seahawks game against the Washington football team, a very important game, and saying, hey, that's a side conversation here because Mariners have made some moves. The Apple Cup was unbelievable. Let's react to that. Let's react to, you know, some amazing slate of games. I mean, I'm all here. I'm all for it, Stacey. What out of the three games that
okay,
you talked
reading
about,
my mind here. So
what do you think is going to be the best game of
now,
the weekend?
My gut is telling me it's going to be Cowboys Raiders. That Cowboys Raiders is in. But you know what? You know, we aren't going to be here Friday. I kind of want to do a bold take Wednesday and say the most entertaining game.
Don't.
Yep. Is really going to be Lions Bears.
Get out of here.
No, I mean it. You, and I'm going to stand by it. I'm not going to change my mind. And if it's not, I'm going to pretend I never said that. All right. Okay. That will do it for us for this week. Oh, my God. We will talk to you guys Monday as we get ready to preview this upcoming Seahawks game. But don't worry. Your preview of the game, you don't have to wait until Monday. In fact, it's going to start right now with the Huddle. Dave Wyman about to join us. Don't go anywhere.